What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host. He's Thomas Tranz. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk, it's brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Drance, what's up, man?
Not much, buddy. Glad to be here. I've got 2 days with you this week.
Yeah.
And then I'm gone for a bunch of shows.
And I get bonus vacation.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm off. What, like, I have like a 6-day weekend coming up because it's Victoria Day on the other side.
Sick.
I'm so excited. I've been thinking about it for weeks.
That's wicked, man. You're like Jordy Ben.
Sure.
benefiting from the excellent timing of your partner.
That's right. So by the way, yeah, so we're here today,
I'm serious though, I'm happy for you.
Tomorrow, of course. Yeah. I hope so. We're here today, tomorrow, Wednesday, the Canucks brunch crew with our producer Lena and Josh jump in and take our slot. And then Thursday and Friday, I think baseball of different varieties is being played in our slot. So I think we got Jays on Thursday, Nooner at the Nat on Friday. So a short week for us, but we'll try to pack in as much as we can over the course of these next couple of shows. And there is a lot to get into, and we'll talk to Kevin Woodley at 12:30. Certainly an interesting goaltending storyline for the Edmonton Oilers going into tonight's game 4 in that series. Lots of other stuff we can get into with Woodley. We'll do plenty of Canucks talk as well. Of course, you have one of your staple pieces up at The Athletic, which is looking at the salary cap outlook for the Canucks going into the summer. So we can dive into that. We can take listener questions. We'll start with the Stanley Cup playoffs, though. And to do that, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks and the Stanley Cup playoffs, starting with the headlines. And I'll just run through where things stand as of right now in the playoffs. And 3 out of 4 series, I would say, very, very entertaining, dramatic, lots to dig into.
Wow.
Carolina and Washington also exist. They're also playing. So good for them.
Yeah.
They're like the cool down spot. You know what I mean?
I mean, I thought the third period of game 2 was a ton of fun.
I will also say,
no.
Carolina.
No.
Carolina is minus 275 tonight against the one seed in their conference. Yeah, and there's no like extent. It's not like, oh, they lost the start. Like, there's no extenuating circumstances.
None.
They're just minus 275. That's a wild number.
Well,
in the second round of the playoffs against the one seed?
I mean, pretty good value on
the I'm not saying regularly. It's wrong. It's just like, whoa.
The Caps were plus 155 on home ice in this series.
Yeah.
You know, the truth is that Vegas sees the Capitals as a paper tiger, and Vegas sees Carolina as an exceptional contending level team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally understandable when you consider that a lot of the professional bettors are using data and looking at the margin by which the Carolina Hurricanes control play, and not just against the Capitals, but in general, and doing the same with the Capitals and fading their shooting percentage excellence and on and on. I mean, it's like a perfect storm for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're a quant-based hockey analyst or better, Carolina is, you know, like absolute catnip.
Yeah. So running through where things stand after the weekend, Florida, 2 games they win at home, so they tie their series up against the Leafs. 2 games apiece. Yeah, that one shifts back to Toronto. Vegas wins to make it 2-1 for Edmonton, thanks to a stunning last-second goal from Riley Smith off Leon Draisaitl's stick in that one. And Dallas leads Winnipeg 2-1 in that series. Of course, Carolina leads Washington 2-1. So tonight, it's Carolina versus Washington. It's Edmonton versus Vegas. And just even in the last, now, 72 hours since the weekend started and into today. I mean, there was the finish in Vegas Edmonton game 3 with Riley Smith and you know, William Karlsson creating a goal out of nothing, basically at the end of the
Bill
game.
Rocks.
He's really good.
Really good.
Going in off Leon Draisaitl, you had the kick kicked goal controversy.
Can't stop scoring big playoff goals.
You had the kicked goal controversy in Dallas and Winnipeg last night, which took them like 10 minutes to review, which is wild.
10 minutes to review and they got it wrong?
Yeah. I feel like the goal should count.
I agree with you. But it's just
why did they say what they just didn't like? They explain it right.
Well, no, it shouldn't have counted based on how the rule is written.
It looks to me also, though, that it might have hit Petrovic's stick.
No.
That's what I thought they were looking at, to be perfectly honest.
I think they were looking to see if it hit Petrovic or Sandberg's stick, because if it only hit the goalie's stick, it shouldn't count.
It shouldn't count. But it feels like it should count.
He didn't, like, a direct kicking motion from behind the net. You're allowed to play the puck into a dangerous area. Like,
yeah.
There's no reasonable expectation. So, you know what? I think, though, they should clarify that, like, the direct kicking motion can't be used to direct the puck on net.
Yes.
As opposed to, you know, the wording now. But the letter of the law, they got the call wrong after a 10-minute review.
After a lengthy review.
Which doesn't make sense. No, I mean, it was honestly, a weird one. I actually think it's the worst call we've seen in the playoffs. It's the only, I talked about it last week. What was the game that I thought the officiating was really poor? I guess I was with Josh.
I was going to say, I don't know.
There was another game last week where I was annoyed by the officiating taking the flow out of the game. But for the most part, I think we've now watched, three scintillating weeks of playoff hockey. And for the most part, I don't think officiating has been part of the conversation, despite the best efforts of Toronto Maple Leafs fans. And, you know, I still think that's mostly true. That was a bad call.
Yeah, it was weird.
But I agree with you that, like,
it was a bad call, but I can't get too broken up about it because it's like, but that should count.
It should count.
You know what I mean?
The letter of the law says one thing, but we all know that the spirit of the rule. Plus, it's cool to see Alex Petrovic, you know, whose career hasn't had a linear progression, have a big moment.
No, yeah.
Really cool.
Especially, I also love that in the official like NHL scorekeeping, they assign a type of shot to every goal, and that one's listed as wrist shot. Wicked wrist shot by Alex Petrovic to score the game winner for the Dallas Stars. But I know that the series may be drawing the most of your attention right now, and I think understandably so, since they've battled back to tie it at two, is the Florida Panthers and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And of course, in that
one...
Are
you calling me a Panthers homer?
No. No. But there's been a lot of noise around that series, I think it's fair to say. And a lot of that noise coming from, of course, the fact that it's the Toronto Maple Leafs. They have the biggest fan base in Canada in hockey. And it, as you might have heard, most of the media that covers the NHL in this country lives in Toronto.
Right.
So there's a lot of noise happening around this series.
A lot of opinions because the games start at 4 p.m. Pacific.
The sense I get from it is that also what's happening now is Leafs fans are like pre-lashing out in panic because they can sense it slipping away.
You think that's what
it is? It's gone so quickly from this is our year, this team is different, Mitch Marner, he's a new player since the Four Nations, Craig Berube, Chris Tanev, Brandon Carlo, we're totally different. Nothing, you know, throw out everything that happened in the playoffs with us in the past. We're going to win the cup this year too. Oh my God, Brad Marchand scored an overtime goal against us and then we got shut out. Auston Matthews hasn't scored in forever. Mitch Marner has zero shots on goal in the last two games and we're going to blow this. And so now it's like they haven't internalized it and looked inwards at their own team yet. That firing squad hasn't begun. The circular firing squad hasn't begun. It's still an outward firing squad at everyone else. They're pre-mad at everyone else because they can sense on the horizon they're about to get really mad at their own team if they blow this series. That's my theory for what's going on with Leafs fans right now.
I think it's just that Leafs fans are every bit as bad about officiating and whining about officiating as other fan bases, and in fact, maybe more so.
Mm-hmm.
But because their fan base is so massive, I feel like they don't get tut-tutted the way other Canadian fan bases do. If Canucks fans were talking about games in the playoffs, a series in the playoffs going this way, and dropping the false equivalences of, like, what about Bennett on Stolarz?
Yeah.
Right? Clear as day, it was an elbow. Not clear as day to anyone watching.
Not remotely clear as day.
It's like he meant to do it. Like, maybe if you break it down frame by frame, but in real time, it looks like a 2-minute minor for goaltender interference. Not more than that.
Frankly, if you break it down frame by frame, I actually think it looks less bad. Once you start looking at that,
well, it depends how you edit it.
Once you start looking at that hit frame by frame, it's like, I think it was his glove that caught him, and his hands are like aggressively.
I don't even know that it's an elbow.
His hands are like aggressively close to his body. Like he's not.
Yeah.
It's just like there's barely anything there.
Well, and the Kulikov hit was a bad one. I guess fans are saying the karma that Barkov deserved, the Domi hit that Domi was suspended for because he threw something of a high hit on, I think it was Jake McCabe. But it wasn't, right? Like the thing is in the play between Stolarz and Bennett, the puck's in the crease. You know, at most it's a minor for goalie interference. I don't think any of us would say that would disagree with that.
No.
The Barkov hit, I think it was McCabe. That's the puck's right there. That's within the scope of action. And McCabe ducks down right before contact. So I don't know what to tell you. Like, that's not a hit that should be high, but the body position changes at the last moment. Kulikov has to tuck his elbow on that hit on Marner. I didn't like that hit. I would have had no problem with that being a minor penalty. But again, Marner spins and ducks as contact's initiated. And as we know, when the league is ruling on and penalizing Rule 48 violations, sudden change in positioning of the player getting hit is factored into it. This isn't high sticking. It is adjudicated differently both by the officials and by DOPS. The Domi hit on Barkov at the end of the game is away from the play message sending. It's a hit from behind on a star player in which the star player's head as a secondary point of contact connects with the end boards. Like it's boarding, it's from behind. It's exactly the sort of hit we don't want to see. And it's away from the play. It has nothing to do with the play. It's pure message sending. Had to be a fine. I have no problem with a fine versus a suspension, but it had to be noted in the record book as like something we can't have. This is too dangerous a hit, too injurious a hit. And I don't know why. I don't know why Maple Leafs fans are treated with such kid gloves by media. Like, we can just say this. Like, the way that this fan base is whining as this series goes on is ridiculous. And any other Canadian fan base talking about their team and talking about the series like this and molding, you know, carnival hats out of tinfoil while watching these games would be getting called out as like unserious. There's a dark underbelly to that fan base. But no one ever does that to Toronto. Leafs fans just get indulged for their sort of nasal gazing whininess in a way that I don't think like Oilers fans or Canucks fans or Senators fans, they're not indulged the same way by national media or the conversation around the team.
It's especially wild to me because the Leafs were the beneficiary of one of the all-time head-scratching bizarre penalty calls, frankly, in NHL playoff history, in this series with the phantom embellishment call on Evan Rodriguez, where he got his face smashed into the boards and got hit with an embellishment call for it. And the funny thing is I've started to see Leafs fans on social media bring that up as like, an example of the Panthers being dirty. It's like, well, Rodriguez got called for embellishment because they're a bunch of floppers. It's like, did you watch that play? There was no embellishment. It was a ridiculous call. It was one of the most ridiculous calls anyone's ever seen. That happened for your team's benefit, like last week. What are we talking about here?
And I thought there were some ticky-tack second period calls that favored the Leafs in that game last night. I thought there were some ticky-tack calls in the first that favored the Panthers. The truth is I don't think officiating or disciplinary matters have shaped the outcome of this series. You know, like it's 2-2 because Leafs goaltenders outplayed Bobrovsky in the first two games of the series. And since about the midway point of the second period, the Florida Panthers have turned up. The Maple Leafs have stopped being able to break out the puck as cleanly as they were in the opening five periods of this series. And as a result, Florida's pressure game is beginning to play again. Marner still playing well, not as impactful in game four. Nylander, clearly Toronto's most dangerous player in the series, thought it was interesting that like Paul Maurice sicked Barkov on Nylander once the series shifted to home ice. I think that's a phenomenally interesting wrinkle in terms of sort of how we talk about this Leafs core and where they're at this stage in their development. I think the maturity of this Leafs team, their preparation, the way they've attacked Bobrovsky high with relentless focus and discipline throughout this series, I think shows the value of having a battle-tested coach like Craig Berube. I think he's done an exceptional job. I think this has been a really fun series, and I think all the conversation being focused on literally imagined grievances is obscuring from what's been a pretty phenomenal hockey series contested by two really good, really well-prepared, really well-coached teams that are actually trying and executing some really interesting tactical stuff. If only we could take a step back, stop whining about nonsense, and just kind of enjoy the good things, the positive things that we're seeing on the ice, because this is the passion level, the physicality. Like, people are crying about all these borderline hits. I'm watching this just astonished by what a meat grinder series it is. Like,
yeah, it's a fun physical series.
And not only is it a fun physical series, but seeing a Leafs team that, contrary to their reputation in previous years, is finding themselves in this meat grinder physical series and looks absolutely up to par, absolutely up to the task. Like, there's so many things we could be talking about that are fun and interesting, and instead it's like, well, what about the Stolarz hit? Barkov deserved it. It's like, guys, that was a bad hit. It got punished. It's good. Let's move on. There's a lot of fun hockey to discuss and focus on if we can just stop whining for a second.
All right, on the slate tonight in the NHL, Caps, Hurricanes, Game 4, and then also Game 4 between the Golden Knights and the Oilers. Also, I want to mention quickly here, the Abbotsford Canucks advanced to the third round of the Calder Cup playoffs. They're going to face the Colorado Eagles after dispatching the Coachella Valley Firebirds in four games in the previous series. Bit of a delay here. That series doesn't get going until Friday in Abbotsford, but round three now for the Abbey Canucks. So they've managed to get through those early potential quick exits in the Calder Cup playoffs that can happen to teams. And they're officially on a bit of a run here. So we'll see if they can keep it going against the Colorado Eagles when that series starts again on Friday in Abbotsford. Okay, broadsheet time here, and a lot of reporting to dig through on the coaching front, both as it pertains to Rick Tocchet and what's next for him, but also maybe more importantly, what's next for the Canucks head coaching vacancy. And on that front, Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada, he was on with Donnie and Dolly earlier today, basically said that the Canucks did a bunch of interviews last week. This week, they want to go down to a short list of three or four candidates, do further interviews. And he says that he thinks Marco Sturm and Manny Malhotra will both be on that list, that short list of three to four candidates. And then he says maybe one or two more. So we're getting down to a short list, but a very small group of names here, as it looks like, to potentially be the next head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. And I am curious, because with that break in the AHL schedule, I wonder if that gives Canucks management a bit of a time to maybe do some interviews, talk to Malhotra about it. The Marco Sturm name is interesting. I want to run this past you, Drance, because Elliot Friedman has mentioned Marco Sturm a couple of times. I think his name was first reported by Irfan Ghaffar here in Vancouver. And one of the things that Friedman has hit whenever he's brought up Marco Sturm is this notion that, like, Sturm would be really excited to get the job. Hey, one thing about Marco Sturm, he'd be really, really happy to get this job. And that's great, but it also kind of makes me think, like, well, yeah, it's an NHL head coaching job, and he's never been an NHL head coach. Like, of course he's going to be excited. Am I doing, like, too much Doomer Canucks stuff here?
Yes.
If I read the implication that other people wouldn't be excited to get the job, is that going too far?
I think so.
Because it's just weird to me that it's like, most coaches who get offered an NHL job are excited about it. You know what I mean?
You don't want to settle. You don't want to settle. You want to be
the belle
of the ball.
I'm not saying, like, Marco Sturm could be a great coach. It's just weird that that's being, like, hyped up as a reason to hire him.
Hey,
my number one thing I like about this guy, he's available and interested. It's like, okay.
Hey, available and interested. That is very important when you're looking to couple up with someone. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry, that matters. It matters. Enthusiasm matters.
But is that what it's going to come down to?
Well, you're looking at this team. We're having conversations about this team.
Yeah.
You know the reality of this situation. It's a challenge.
Yeah. But that's fair. But that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, does the fact that that's a big selling point in Marco Sturm's favor tell us even more than we can see from the outside looking in that, like, an enthusiasm gap might be an issue for the Canucks?
Let me put it to you this way. Who would you consider to be, like, the big name coach that you want?
I don't want a big name coach. I'm not interested in that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Marco Sturm's an elite American League head coach who's had significant success at the international level, a historic success from the perspective of the German national team, especially at the 2018 Olympics. They got real close to upsetting the Russians in the gold medal game. Did a phenomenal job with that roster. Christian Ehrhoff's final ride, by the way. Shout out to him. And yeah, I mean, I think he'd be a really strong candidate. My concern, I
want to be clear. I have no issue with Marco Sturm as the next head coach of the Canucks.
He's got the profile that I'm talking about.
My only point is I would like from a decision-making standpoint for it to be more, we've got three or four guys who would be really excited to get the job.
But I'm sure they do.
But do they? Why are we only hearing it about him then?
Well,
as I said, look, maybe
he's the only name other than Malhotra.
Maybe I'm reading too much into it.
He's the only other shortlist name other than Malhotra that we've unearthed to this point.
And Sat has said, like, well, who knows? Malhotra might not take the job.
Yeah.
You see what I'm getting at here.
I see what you're getting at, but I do think you're just don't worry about it, man. Like,
all right.
Whether the profile we've been talking about and focused on is the elite American League head coach, right? Whether it's Todd Nelson, Mike Vellucci, Marco Sturm, Manny Malhotra.
Yeah.
You know, if Jeremy Colliton ends up
Mitch Love,
yeah. Right. Great. That all makes sense to me. Would Canucks fans feel a lot better if they just heard someone say, like, Jay Woodcroft is making eyes at the Canucks from across the bar? Like, is that what we want? We just, like, want some sign of other options?
I think that would make them feel a lot better, to be perfectly honest.
We need the confidence boost. Flirtation. That's what we need. We need the
100%. Yeah.
we need the Canucks to just like have someone touch their forearm so that they can feel better about
themselves. Jay Woodcroft just needs to like tell an insider, be like, I'd consider the Canucks job if they offered it to me. That's all we need. that's all we need.
And this is because of the way that talk it spurned. Like, I'm asking you to explain this to me like I'm five.
I think that's part of it. Well, right. I think that's it. That's absolutely it.
So Canucks fans, in thinking about the head coaching vacancy, are literally sort of reeling from their latest rejection.
Yes. And it's the one that Tocchet walked away, but then the Tocchet Seattle reporting.
Have you considered them? They're interested and available. Like, yes.
sign me up. Yeah. By the way.
And it's like, and you're like, I'm not sure. And your buddy's like, you need an easy win right now, bud. You're in a dark place.
Yeah.
You're in a rut.
Speaking of Rick Tocchet, because I think Canucks fans still very much care about what happens here and where he ends up. The word from Elliot Friedman on today's 32 Thoughts podcast was teams aren't interviewing him. He's interviewing teams. So Tocchet is the Rorschach of the NHL head coaching world. Do you remember that from Watchmen? He's in prison. And he's like, you're stuck in here with me.
Yeah,
I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me. That's basically what Tocchet has told teams around the NHL,
heck
apparently.
Yeah.
According to Elliot Friedman, I also want to note Moj on Friday on Halford and Brough with Brough and myself. Said that both Seattle and Philadelphia, I forget the exact wording, but it was basically they've shown like the most serious possible interest you can show to Rick Tocchet. Now, whether that means like a tangible offer or just a ton of excitement, but stopping just short of a tangible offer, I think that's notable. And Elliot Friedman also on Donnie and Dolly saying Seattle big on Tocchet, doesn't think that's going to happen necessarily, getting some conflicting information on Philly, not sure Boston wants to pay him, and then basically says there's a chance he ends up back on TV next year. So it's an interesting situation with Tocchet. On the one hand, it sounds like he is very much, he's in a position to call his shot and pick from a number of destinations or choose to sit out and wait and see what happens.
This is what we talked about with the coaching market. The next domino to fall was going to be Anaheim, which occurred, and now the next domino to fall is going to be Tocchet. One way or the other.
Right.
And then we'll start filling it in beyond that. I would expect, maybe not this week, maybe not next week, but by the end of May, you'd expect that domino to fall. And I don't know. I'll be curious to see, like, on the Canucks front, I can tell you this, Jim Rutherford definitely doesn't want to go last.
Right.
Right? Like, he's going to make his call at some point, and I would expect him to make his call some point, like before the Stanley Cup final. I don't think he wants to be one of those teams hiring a coach in June 15th.
If you get down to a short list this week and are doing interviews, I mean, it could be next week easily, right?
Yeah,
like
that would seem. I mean, late May seems like before the conference final seems fast, but again, Rutherford's pretty decisive. Once he makes up his mind, right? That tends to carry a lot of weight.
All right, time for quickly here for a one to watch brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire. And I'm going, this is a layup. I feel like I've chosen Edmonton goalies a lot, but I'm going to Stuart Skinner. Calvin Pickard not ready for tonight's game yet. So they're going back to Stuart Skinner. And All of the questions, I think, remain with Stuart Skinner's game. Where it's at, can he make enough saves to give McDavid and Draisaitl a chance to do their thing and prevent Vegas from evening up this series before it heads back to Vegas for Game 5? That would be a massive, massive blow for the Edmonton Oilers. So all eyes will be on Stuart Skinner in the Oilers' crease tonight. We can talk more about that with Kevin Woodley in just a second. That's one to watch, brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire. It's time to put on your Toyo tires, whether you drive a car, light truck, or van. Toyo tires are designed to perform in all kinds of conditions. Visit Delaney's OK Tire in Langley and Aldergrove. That's the whiteboard. We'll take a break. Kevin Woodley next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.